My name's Don. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is Coopersburg. My sobriety date is March 28th, 1993. And I love this prayer. I'm going to use that as I speak tonight. I've never been to this meeting. Coopersburg, my home group, and I've never even been here. My husband has, who's in the program, and he described it, and it's really cool to be here. I particularly like the crickets. Just gives me, pause. So I was going to talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I want to talk about the slogans. When I first got sober, I got sober in Chicago at a clubhouse, an Alano house in Lincoln Park in Chicago. And they had the big pictures. I'm sure you've seen them around in various clubhouses of all the slogans, and I thought they were ridiculous at the time. And I especially liked the one that said, think, 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 and that the clubhouse I got sober, it was upside down, which is very important for me, but it took me a long time to understand that. So I figure, these slogans have been coming up for me this week, and I always just try to trust that. So I'm just going to tell my story and see how they fall into it, because I'm assuming they will, because I prayed about it, and that's what came up, and that's how it works, right? So I was born in Baltimore, right on the edge of the city, and I don't remember my first drink because I was a toddler. I grew up with lots of alcoholism on both sides, and they thought it was cute to give me beer, and I liked to taste my grandmother's whiskey sours on Sunday. So I pretty much hit the ground running. I did my first real drunk behind Parkville Shopping Center when I was 13 with a fifth of Boone's Farm Strawberry Fields, which if you've ever drank, you usually throw up red, which is what I did, and I thought that was cool, and so I did it some more. I was a really nervous kid. I was very, very nervous around people. I had a lot of fear all the time. I used to choose my clothes based on how much you could see the perspiration, literally, because I was kind of a wreck all the time. So when I drank alcohol, it all went away. And it was like magic. Suddenly, I didn't have any fear of people anymore. There's lots of reasons for that. I had some crazy stuff happen to me at a young age and some pretty nasty stuff. And I'm an alcoholic. Everybody doesn't deal with it that way. I have a disease of the mind and an allergy of the body. I loved alcohol. No one ever forced me to drink. I loved the taste of it. And frankly, if I could drink it with no consequences, I would still be drinking it today because there was not a drink that I didn't like. Everything was good for me. I liked everything. So I think that whole disease of the mind, allergy of the body thing, that's what screwed me up, right? I would go out and drink a fifth at Boone's Farm Strawberry Fields because it tasted like Kool-Aid with a little zip and throw up. And most people would go, wow, that was nasty. I'm never going to do that again. But I didn't, of course. Like all you, I decided that was the best thing ever. And so I'm going to do it as much as I can, as much as possible. Now, when I started drinking, the drinking age was 18. In Baltimore. And of course, we all had fake IDs. By the time I was 15 and 16, I had fake IDs. And I looked really young. So, they just didn't really care that much in those days. I mean, so I was going to bars, 14, 15. It kind of cracks me up because I looked really young. But, I was cash in the register, I guess, at that point. So the first slogan I have here is easy does it. Easy does it. So I'm going to use that tonight as I talk because I love this. I keep thinking about this set-aside prayer because I have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth. So I'm going to easy does it on myself here. So I just drank. I mean, I'm not going to tell you all the stories. You know them. I hit and run cars. I woke up with people I didn't know. You name it, I did it. And I did a lot of dry goods. I found the perfect combination of alcohol and drugs so that I could drink all night. That was my goal, is to drink as much as possible. I was kind of afraid of drugs because I don't like needles, and I just assumed I'd go there. So I kind of was more cautious about drugs. Alcohol was just kind of the culture of my family. So it made total sense to drink. That's what we did at every occasion. My father's side of the family would get drunk and throw people into the pool. My mother's side of the family would get drunk and get in big fights. So it was, this kind of stoicism with this craziness. And so I just thought that's what everybody did. So I drank my way through high school. I stopped doing drugs by the time I was a senior in high school. I went to college, somehow managed through art school with a kind of a B. Thought it was ridiculous that people were experimenting with drugs in college because I had been there and done that. But I guess that's what you do. You experiment, you go, oh, that was weird, and you move on. Again, I didn't get that gene, so everything I did with gusto, right? I'm an extremist. So I went to college, drank my way through college, which is really a sin because my mom got a job to put me through college. I was the first person in my family to go to college. And I wish I could go now, I mean, it was such a cool school and it was a great experience, and I drank my way through it and got B's. So I might have been able to get A's if I wasn't drunk all the time. Then I got a job, and I am a chronic overachiever. So I know that sounds kind of funny. Any overachievers here? Right here. So I'm a chronic overachiever. So I would drink every night at a skanky little bar in Baltimore where the low lifes of the low hung out. And then I would go to work at my job at the Baltimore Museum of Art during the day. So I had this, double life. I would go at this museum and work, and then I'd go hang out with scums of the earth, including myself. And I pulled this off for many years. I had food poisoning a lot. I showed up to work really no matter what, even if I was I still show up to work because you got to show up to work, We're workers in my family. They work. So I never lost a job because work is as important as drinking where I come from. You work and you drink, and you don't let it get in the way. You don't let drinking get in the way of your work, okay? So even if you're hungover and you feel like crap, you go to work. So I didn't do a great job on some days, I'm sure, but that's what I did. And then I got this opportunity to go to Germany. Now, meanwhile, back at the ranch, I'm dating. I use that word very loosely because I don't think I really went on a date. I think the first guy I went out with had a Gran Torino with green shag carpeting on the roof and a nice little dashboard with colors that I applied using my art talents, and he was a drug dealer. That was my first boyfriend. So our dates were really selling drugs, and I never went to the movies. I never really went on a date till I was till I was sober. I didn't know what a date was. I mean, you pick you up, he has the bong and the case and the sheet of acid. That was my idea of a date. Bye, Dad, going on a date with my drug dealer boyfriend. And I continued that. I always found somebody who did more bad things than I did because it made me feel good about myself. I had to find somebody who was just a little worse off than me so that I would feel okay and not want to kill myself because I was not a happy person unless I was drunk. Then I was pretty happy. Unless I was mad, then I was crazy. So I guess alcohol just amplified all my emotions and gave me the permission to feel them. Oh, by the way, first things first, I didn't know how to feel anything. That was not okay in my family. Joy was not acceptable. Sadness was really not acceptable. And anger was definitely not acceptable. We lived under, unless people drank, but we lived under this kind of shield of goo. I used to call it the shame slime coat. Like, we just wore this coat all the time of slimy shame, and we weren't allowed to have any feelings. That was our MO, no feelings. So I'm dating these people, you know, pretty much making a mess of things. I never went on a date sober, and like I said, until after I was 30. So I'm not really sure. I think I went to a movie once with a group of friends, but like I never went to a movie and dinner. We would, like I said, find our drugs and our alcohol and go, get wasted. That was what it was all about. Then, somewhere along the line, I met a friend who was an Al-Anon. So I had no idea what A, bless you, or Al-Anon was. And I started going to Al-Anon. And, of course, I mastered that in like a month, right? I was chairing the meetings because I'm an overachiever, right? So I was going to an Al-Anon meeting once a week, and I was kind of getting a little sniff about this whole 12-step thing. I was very sick. So if any of you ever went to Al-Anon before you got sober, not much goes in, right? Because if you're going to Al-Anon meetings drunk, you really don't get like the issue about, not enabling someone, because I have to work Al-Anon on myself. I'm a double winner. So anyway, so I'm starting to go to Al-Anon. Then I get this grant. So I'm drinking near beer because I'm like, well, I can't really go to Al-Anon and, like, be drunk. So I'm going to drink near beer. I'm going to drink a lot of it, because it's like 5% alcohol. So you have to drink a lot of near beer to get drunk. But I think I'm doing the right thing, which is the best I could do, right? Easy does it. Done. That was the best I could do. So, then I get this grant to move to Germany. Now, if any of you have ever been to Germany, beer is cheaper than water in Germany. So I'm attempting to not drink near beer. And if you even said near beer in Germany, you'd like literally get laughed out of the country. So I go to Germany. I try not to drink. It lasts about, a few weeks, maybe a month. And then I'm off to the races. So I'm drinking again, finding crazy people, whatever language I could do it. It didn't matter. But in Germany is when the pain started hitting the fan. That's when it started. Like, I didn't hit one bottom. I hit this, like, slow, like, skidding emotional bottom that took me several years. So in Germany, I'm making all this crazy art. I don't know what it's about. I'm in all this pain, like this emotional pain. And I'm drinking, and I'm dating a guy that I don't even like because he could drink as much as I could drink. So that was kind of my MO. And then I meet up, strangely, with this woman who is doing this therapy stuff. Now, I had already been to therapy. I knew I'd be in therapy at a very young age. It's just kind of like one of those things. Some people know they're going to, like, get a perm. I knew I was going to go to therapy. It's just kind of what I knew. So I had already been going to therapy, but if any of you have ever been to therapy while you're drinking, anybody do that? Right? You can really pull a lot over on a therapist. I mean, you can. They only do what you know, what you tell them. They're not psychic. At least mine weren't. So I was already in therapy, you know, blaming my dad and all that stuff that I was trying to get away with. So I go to Germany and I meet up with this therapist because really I'm a seeker. You know, I'm a seeker. I seek. I was seeking for God in a bottle. It's really what I was doing. And it was working, you know, because it made me feel better. It did. Alcohol saved my life until it was killing me. So it made me feel better. So it was God in a bottle, as far as I'm concerned. That was my higher power. It got me through, you know? And I trust my higher power had this path for me, right? Live and let live. See? Live and let live. It's like our promises say, no matter how far down I've gone, I know my experience, strength, and hope will help somebody else. I mean, I really trust that my path really is exactly what it's supposed to be. I don't always like it. I don't always go easily. But I know it is. I mean, I can tell you right now today, you know, I'm struggling with some job stuff. Am I going, no, God, I know you have the plan and I'm good. No, that's not how I operate. I'm like, bang, bang, bang. Okay, I'll listen to you. Okay? That's how I operate. I don't operate in the, like, zen of life, you know? I have the tools, but I only dabble in that when I'm in a lot of pain, you know? Anyway, so I meet this therapist in Germany. She takes me to this retreat. Like this intense emotional workshop retreat. I mean, this is like rip. This is the 1991. Oh, by the way, it's the year the wall came down in Germany. I was happened to be there. A little drama, you know. Good for an alcoholic taking the Berlin Wall down. Donna's there. You know what I mean? Overachieving. Anyway, so I go to this retreat and people are like doing this emotional. Like John Lennon Mothered. Any of you know that song? Like, ah! I won't do it because I'll scare the neighbors, but like this emotional, intense work. And I'm like hearing this and I'm leaving my body. And you have that experience where you like dissociate so bad that you're like, you're up on the ceiling watching stuff because the crap that's coming out of their mouths is in me, right? But I'm drinking it away, right? And smoking. That's my smoking sobriety date too. I had to give up both because I couldn't do one without the other. So alcohol made me feel better. Smoking took away my feelings. Oh, love that. Cigarette. Come on, 22 years later, I can still swallowing down those feels. Sorry, smokers. That's how it works for me, man. I'm in pain. Ugh, all gone. Give me a drink, a cigarette. I'm good. So these people are screaming. They're having all these feelings, and I'm like freaking out. I'm leaving. I'm floating on the ceiling. I'm so dissociated with this situation. But it like cracked me open just enough that when I moved back, I met another man, you know, in Germany. That's what I did. I met men that weren't good for me, and then I connected. And so then I moved to Chicago with him because that's what he did. So I moved to Chicago. I meet up in this therapy group. People are screaming, you know, because again, I don't know. I don't know how I got here. You know what I mean? What do we say? Our best decisions were the worst, you know? I mean, I made these decisions. I shouldn't have been going to therapy. I should have been out drinking, but somehow I'm going to therapy in this intense therapy group. People are processing these feelings, and I'm drinking. And I'm trying to put this together, right? That's where I met my husband, by the way, in therapy. I highly don't recommend that. But we were in a therapy group together, so we know every secret about each other there is to know. So finally, I get confronted by my group because my lies are starting to fray, you know. So I'm dating a guy. I'm sleeping with a guy. Come on. I'm sleeping with a guy. We're drinking scotch. Now, if I wind back a little, scotch was the drink that killed my uncle, who I personally buried. Scotch, like, destroys your liver really fast. It's like vodka, right? It's like hammers your liver, right? My uncle looked like he was 90 when he was 60. I mean, literally, because he drank scotch for like 40 years. This man drank scotch. So here I am in Chicago. Oh, my uncle lived in Chicago. So here I am in Chicago. I'm drinking scotch because it's cool, right? The clink, clink. I mean, I'm sure it was the crappiest, cheapest scotch. I know nothing about scotch. All I know is it sounds cool and like James Bond drinks it or so. I don't know. So I'm drinking scotch in Chicago in therapy and trying to say, oh, this guy who's, you know, apartment was filthy. We're sleeping on the floor in dirty sheets. You know the, right? You know that girl. He doesn't wash his clothes. He buys them at Goodwill and throws the dirty ones away. I'm working in museums, right? Because I'm an overachiever. That's what I do. But for the grace of God, go I, right? So I'm in my therapy group trying to, like, build this guy up, you know? Oh, we have so much fun. He's such a good guy. And I won't go into the gory details. Suffice it to say, it was a very sick relationship. So I'm riding my bike because now I have no car. I sold everything because I was a cool artist, you know, and that's what we do. Sold everything. I moved to Chicago. I move into the ghetto because I'm an urban pioneer. I don't know why I'm doing this tonight. Sorry. I usually don't do this. Anyway, so I'm an urban pioneer. I'm living in the ghetto in Chicago. The Bulls win their first championship, and the gangbangers are driving around shooting guns off, and I think it's because there's a lunar eclipse, because I had no idea who the Bulls were. Sorry, basketball fans. But that's where I lived, you know? So I'm riding my bike through Chicago at 3 a.m. because I couldn't spend the night with a guy because it was really sick. It was really sick relationship. Anyway, those were the days. and there's gunshots. I mean, I got caught in gun crossfire, but I thought that was normal, right? Working in museums, riding my bike through gunfire. Right? Isn't that what professionals do? Sorry, I don't know what's my deal. Anyway, so, but for the grace of God, go I. I mean, there have been so many times I should have died, right? I literally was riding down Armitage, if you know Chicago, on my bike. I'm riding on my bike, and this guy is chasing another guy, and he's shooting at him, and it's like I'm in a movie, you know, if you've ever seen a gun. And I'm like, whoa. So everything goes slow. And they're like running right next to me, shooting at each other. And I'm like, there's something wrong here. There's something wrong here. So I start, my stories start to fall apart in my therapy group. And my group calls me on drinking. And my friend says, you know, basically, I'm not going to hang out with you. She's in AA, a new friend, in therapy. I'm not going to hang out with you unless you go to an AA meeting with me this Sunday at 4 o'clock. So Sunday, 4 o'clock, May 28th is when I sat in my first AA room. And it was the first time in my life that I was honest. It was the absolute first time. I really, it's like, I don't know, it's like the whole world burst open, you know? It's like I could see clear for the first time at the age of 30. So my next little phrase here is think, think, think. Now, I said, this phrase I need to turn upside down because I'm a thinker. I'm a Virgo, if any of you know anything about astrology, and we like to think. We also like to pick on people and be really critical of ourselves and everyone else. So I had to, like, not think. I had to do whatever my sponsor told me. So this woman became my sponsor. Her name was Pat. She was a Franciscan nun. And the first day of the meeting, she said, "Sweetheart, you are the most important person in this room." And I'll never forget that. So I asked her to be my sponsor because I thought she was a sweet nun. Later to find out that she had sliced her neck from here to here. And obviously had lived to tell about it. So Pat became my sponsor. And this is where the magic happens, you know. Connection. This fellowship thing. This magic that we all share. I started to connect with another human being for the first time ever. I started to work the steps, and I did whatever she told me. Like many of us, you told me to bark, I would have barked, you know. I was in so much pain, emotionally and spiritually, that I couldn't function. I did my job because we're workers, and that's what you do. You work. And I was a work addict. I'm going to say it, you know. I worked 12-hour days. I kept moving. That's what my family does. They move. They go. They don't stop. My husband's family, they lay on the couch. They're, like, depressive. We don't stop. I mean, I've seen, you know, I'm watching my sister, like, kill herself because she doesn't stop. She's, like, had spinal fusions, but she doesn't stop. She, like, retiles her driveway. And she's 5 foot. I'm not talking like she like does paintings. I'm talking like wheelbarrows and you know, and she just keeps going and she drinks at night because she's in so much physical pain and she just keeps going and going. And that's what we do. We just keep going and going. So the first step, admitting I was powerless, that was kind of a no-brainer for me because at that point when I said I was an alcoholic, like I said, it was the first time I ever felt like I was honest in my life. Because, you know, like I mentioned, I had some really crappy things happen to me, which I won't go into here, and they were done by alcoholics. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. It's the last thing I wanted to be was one of these people that did these bad things to little kids. But here I was, admitting that I was an alcoholic. So that brings me to one day at a time, which I just love that phrase. So Pat got me working the steps, and then I kind of outgrew Pat pretty quickly and moved on to somebody else who became my sponsor for years and years. And the thing she would say to me, which is, and I'm a woman, and men are different. We are. It's true. Men and women are different. There, I said it. And women do things different in AA than men. I said it. It's true, right? So it didn't help for me.
Sit down and shut up. Put the cotton.
That didn't work for me. That did not work for me because I was already beating the crap out of myself. That's what I did. I couldn't wait for the fourth step. I was like, bring it on. I was not that nervous about fourth step, girl. I was like, bring it on. Let's skip 2 and 3. Let's go right to the inventory because I got some crap I'm going to tell you about myself. So my sponsor, instead of saying, take the cotton out of your ears, put it in your mouth. That's important. I'm not making fun because I know there have been times when I had to take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth. My favorite phrase she said to me was, gentle, 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 gentle. Because I was like, bring it on, sister. You took away my candy. Now it's time to really hurt myself. You know, that's how I thought. So she was like, no, 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 that's not how this thing works. We don't do that here. We create a higher power. And I was raised Catholic, and the big hairy guy in the sky did not work for me. So she said, no, that's not what we do. So you get to create your own higher power. And for me, that was Lake Michigan. So I'd go to the lake every day. It was bigger than anything else I understood, and I started with that. And since it's grown and grown and grown, but so one day at a time, this whole thing was like so foreign to me. She kept me on the second step for a long time until I got a higher power. And then we stayed on the third step until I got that. And we did a formal third step. If anyone had told me cool, overachieving artist Donna would be kneeling under a tree in the middle of downtown Chicago, saying the third step prayer with people walking around, I would have said, you're crazy. But that's what I was willing to do. Because my sponsor said, we're going to do a formal third step when you're ready. And then I just saw it, you know. Like tonight, my wonderful friends, Rebecca and Lee, here's a little God thing. I didn't know they were going to be here tonight. She's like one of my sisters in sobriety, like my closest sisters. I read at their wedding and I wore this. That's not God. That's just a coincidence. I had no idea they were going to be here. That's so cool, right? It happens all the time. It happens all the time. And that for me, if any of you are early in the steps, you know, just look for that stuff. It can be that silly. I happen to have this shirt on since I wore it at their wedding, you know, that I read Mother Teresa at their wedding. So, you know, that's what I looked for, and it started to work. And one day at a time, I started to get it. Like, I didn't have to be in charge. I thought I was in charge. I'm an overachiever, remember? I'm in charge of how you feel about me. I'm in charge how, you know, I thought I was God. You know, there was alcohol in me, and together we were unstoppable. But the bottom line was, it was just a big lie. It was all big smokescreen, a hoax. Because alcohol is, you know, like the devil. It wants you dead. It wanted me dead, and it was willing to do anything to take me down and take me out. So the last phrase on here is let go and let God. And I just did the short list here. And so after I did that third step, you know, my life just started becoming extraordinary, because I could hear from something other than my head what was the next thing to do, because I didn't know how to do that. I thought I had to sit around and figure everything out. I had to figure it out all the time, 24/7, in my dreams, all the time. And when I was done figuring out me, I had to figure out you and you and you and you. I had to figure out how to act so I could make you act. Oh, my God. It's like they say, you know, in the big book, I was the director and you were my players, you know. It was all about me. I was the biggest piece of shit that the world revolved around. That's who I was in my mind. So suddenly, I called the third step the fuzzy slipper step. because suddenly I had this cushion around me where I could let something else in, you know, let a voice in, let a thought in, hear somebody else. I didn't know how to listen to anybody. I had no idea how to listen to anybody. I thought I did, but I, like they say, and Alan, I wasn't listening. I was waiting for you to stop so I could talk and share my wisdom about who I thought you were and what I think you should do so I feel okay about myself. That's a little Al-Anon twist there, right? So, sorry, I know we're in AA meeting, but like I said, I'm a double winner. Manipulation was my game. So I did that four-step, and it was nothing like I thought it was going to be. It wasn't really like stupid little things I did. It was the core of my fear. So I did that, and then I did my fifth step. Beginning of the end of isolation for me, that was that step, because suddenly my sponsor knew all this stuff, first person ever. And then six and seven started to hammer me, right? They're the hammer steps, right? They're the steps that are like, you think we're simple? Watch out, you know, and those steps started to hammer me, became willing steps, or entirely ready, humbly ask steps. Those are the ones that where I grew up in AA, we work the steps till 12 and then we start all over again. So I just keep working them, and I hope I do for the rest of my life. I've done many four steps. My first four step was, you know, lifting out the charred pieces of rubble in the room. My second one was like sweeping. The third one was like polishing. And then I do small ones. I mean, it's a great tool, right? Like, I'm having problems in this relationship. I'll do a four step or a 10 step. But, you know, if it's a little meatier than 10, then I really need to sit down and write about it and share it with my sponsor. I do it. What great tools to have, you know? And then I started to do my amends, and then started to do a 10 step. Now, when I got to 11, I call 11 the explosion step. That's when my life like exploded, because, you know, I got really connected. Like, I studied meditation, which was very hard for me because I'm a doer. We don't sit still. We don't close our eyes. We don't breathe. We do. So I went to yoga, and I went to a Zen meditation place in Chicago. And I studied meditation, which was like, you know, the opposite of me. And I learned how to breathe. I had no idea. I breathed like from here up. I was like a little dog over Maya with the little baby. That's who I was, you know. So I learned how to breathe. I learned how to listen. I learned how to, you know, I learned how to take risks, you know. I learned how to, you know, hear God say, hey, I want you to cross the street and talk to that person. You know, for me, those are huge risks. I never thought, you know, I want you to tell your dad you love him. I thought I'd go to my grave. We didn't do that. We don't hug. We don't say I love you. We don't. Now, every time I hang up the phone with my dad, I say it. You know, I want you to apply to this school. You know, it was a graduate school for artists. And I applied and I walked in. And I said, I want to apply to school. I have no money. And the only way I can come here is if you pay for it completely. You know, I was like, what do I have to lose? That was kind of where that 11th step took me. And I had a free ride to graduate school because I said, can we do this? Now, my life wasn't magic. There were lots of things I asked for and didn't get. But it's the process of asking, you know. Like right now, I'm looking at a job that I want to apply for. It's scary. It's a big job. And I like to, in my disease, I like to stay small because then, you know, then I can compare myself and feel better than everybody because I'm 22 years sober and I have a fragile self-esteem because I'm an overachiever and I got to be, you know, whatever. So, and I'm like, I'm already getting the job. I'm already decorating the office of the job. I'm already interacting with the people in the job. And I haven't even applied for the job yet. Right? I haven't even revised my resume. And writing, this is today, right? Now, right before I got here, I was like, And you know what? It's not about the job. It's about revising my resume. Then it's about sending out some emails. Then it's about sending my, you know, it's not about the job. It's about the process. It's about life. You know, what do I do next? Okay. So, how do I get to the next step? How do I put one foot in front of the other and let go and let God, you know? I don't know. How long am I supposed to speak? It's 10 of. Jen, what? Okay, whenever. To bring your sleeping bags? No, just kidding. So right now I can stand here at this podium and I can hear the crickets. Hear them? Isn't that cool? Like, that's the third step right there. Like, I'm not standing here going, do they like me? Is it right? Am I doing okay? Well, there's a little bit of that. I'm not going to lie to you. But the bottom line is I can stop and go today in my life right now, in this moment, right here, right now, all is well with every person sitting right here. Just like take that in. Right? Like right here, right now, in this moment, in this AA meeting, all is well. Isn't that cool? Like the building's not burning, right? I mean, you might have hell going on when you leave here. You might be going home to some mess, an illness, something. But right here, right now, we're all okay, you know? And that, to me, is the amazing beauty of AA, because the laundry's not important, the car's not important, because none of it matters if I drink. I have a husband who I would not even have looked at in high school, right? He was the nice guy. I have two kids that we adopted. That wasn't my plan. I was gonna have top two African American kids. Tell my parents that, right? We bought a house in Coopersburg. Coopersburg? How the hell did I get to Coopersburg? Right? I'm a cool city girl, man. You know? I have a car that runs. The payment's bigger than my parents' house payment, right? But I have one. You know, all is well. Right here, right now, Tuesday, Labor Day, all is well. And if there's one message I could leave myself with tonight, is all is well. Let go, let God. And I think I'm going to shut up. I don't have anything else to say. So, thank you. I don't know what I do now. I could sing or something. No, I'm just kidding. Kidding. Really kidding. So, do I just sit down?
Well, thank Debbie one more time Donna, I'm sorry.